Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, from where we podcast to you right now on the Eurosport broadcast balcony, where Catherine Whittaker has just been speaking to Martina Navratilova as part of the Eurosport coverage following Caroline Wozniacki's incredible three-set win. She is a Grand Slam champion, and that has been a long time coming. And she's just going into studio after studio. I believe she's about to speak to Eurosport, no doubt. But what a moment.
I mean, one of the all-time moments, I would say. And it was always going to be, no matter what the outcome, a Halep win, a Wozniacki win, from, I don't know, it was clear that it was going to be that kind of a moment from early on in the second set, maybe even a bit before that. But I'll put my thoughts about Simona Halep on hold for a moment, because Caroline Wozniacki has just emerged from the ESPN studio with the trophy in hand. I think she's now headed into the Eurosport studio. Martina was there waiting for her to pass on her congratulations. It just gets better and better. You've won a Grand Slam. You're world number one. You've just been congratulated by Martina Navratilova. I mean, life is good for Caroline Wozniacki right now.
It sure is. It sure is. And there is a kind of kinship between Grand Slam champions, isn't there? And you can tell that, I've seen this with John McEnroe, wanting to greet Grand Slam champions after they've just broken through and done it. It's rarefied air. Not that many people know about it. And Martina there wanted to just share the moment with her for a second, give her her congratulations, because she would also know, and we've seen it before with Ivan Lendl when he had a long wait for his first title. Mary Carrillo last night comparing on our show Simona to Andy Murray, that the weight, all this sort of thing, it's hard for these players sometimes, isn't it? But what strikes me first reaction is just an enormous asterisk has just been removed from Caroline Wozniacki's biography forever. She's done it now. She's world number one. She's won a slam, and she's fully deserving.
Yeah, she's had to wait a long time to lay those demons to rest, hasn't she? 8 years, the longest gap between stints at world number one. She was there for 64 weeks, I think, last time around, and she had an absolute barrage of criticism. Well, certainly the ranking system had the barrage of criticism. It wasn't her fault. She was world number one. It was her fault, I suppose, she didn't win the Grand Slam title, but the situation was criticised hugely, and she was the face of that situation, and she's dealt with that a long time. Her career was on the decline, is a huge understatement, that's the word, huge understatement. She was ranked close to 80 in the world, and people were questioning whether she was even that interested in tennis. She was she ran the London the New York Marathon, didn't she? And I thought, well, that's amazing, but that surely is not a sensible thing to do if you're serious about a tennis career. But here she is, 2018, a Grand Slam champion, the WTA Finals champion, the world number one. When was she last beaten? When did she last lose a tennis match?
Yeah, well, she lost one in the sort of warm-up tournament,
yes,
here,
of course
to Yulia Gerges. But, you know, you're right. I mean, she's just won the last two big titles that have been played on the WTA Tour. And seeing Grigor Dimitrov try to back up the ATP finals, it's not easy.
Absolutely not, because all that comes with it is just a heck of a lot of extra pressure, which, you know, nobody needs extra pressure, do they? And at 5-1, 40-15 down, boy, was the pressure on. But
yes, of course, that's because she was match points down, wasn't she,
early on? In the second round. Yeah, she's not the first person to win a Grand Slam or even this title from match points down. Angelique Kerber did it 2 years ago, but it's the first time we've ever had two players that have come from match points down along the way in a Grand Slam final. Halep would have been the first to win, having saved match points in two previous matches, but that statistic will have to wait another day. I want a piece of the joy that Caroline Wozniacki is experiencing right now. It must be so unadulterated. So she knows she's had plenty of time to think about it and appreciate it and know what it means.
And again,
you know,
the reaction.
No sort of. Sometimes when you achieve, maybe this is just me or a certain personality type. Sometimes when you achieve really great things in life, or when you've been looking forward to something for so, so long, when it actually comes, there's almost like a weird kind of a sadness. I don't think anyone's created a word for it. And I don't get the feeling that there'll be even a hint of that for Caroline Wozniacki right now. She knows absolutely that she has worked as hard as she possibly could. She's won it the right way. Not that there's a wrong way, but I mean, if you could script a way to do it, you'd script this one. And she knows she's got the world number one ranking as well. She knows there's no stick anyone can beat her with anymore. And
no. How
liberating.
It is. The reaction as well, I think, summed all of what you've just set up, really. If you'd have seen the pictures of her throw the racket in the air, fall on her back, burst into tears, and then talk so candidly, so honestly, with such raw emotion about how nervous she'd been before and how her fiancé had helped her to keep calm earlier on today and just what it meant to her. It must be so difficult, I think, to give these sort of speeches when you are, you know, when you're so overwhelmed, frankly.
Yeah, and when she walked down that Champions Tunnel onto the court, she looked like she was absolutely bricking it for me. For somebody that is so good at putting a game face on, for somebody that's so good at switching a flick and having a gloss and bluffing it and faking it a lot of the time, she looked like she was absolutely, she looked sick. She looked the colour seemed to drain from her face as she was walking. And that was before things had even got particularly tense. You know, if you told her you were going to be 4-3 down in the deciding set, imagine how sick she'd have felt then.
The word's bricking it on the tennis podcast for the first time in 388 episodes. I love that.
It is the first time, David.
It's not going to be the last.
Can we just spare a little moment? I feel like it should almost be a moment of silence, really, for Simona Halep, because...
Well, let's just talk about
the match. Going through right now.
First of all, I mean, the match itself, I think, deserves some coverage here because it was an amazing tennis match. Take aside the storylines, which were aplenty. The first set saw Wozniacki burst into a lead, and then I'm suddenly looking at the last four sets they've played, which were 6-4, 6-1, 6-love, 6-2. And then it was 3-love. And I'm really worried. And I think Ben Rothenberg put up the beatdowns that Simona Halep has suffered this year or this last year, and sometimes really one-sided, uncomfortable scorelines. And I thought, please, let's not have that, because the last thing you want her to do is not do herself justice. And she came back into it, forced the tiebreak, lost the tiebreak, won the second set. And I don't think I've seen those two athletes who are... They must be the fittest athletes on the WTA circuit, those two, the best movers. They've got everything as athletes, really. There's not a corner of the court they can't cover. I don't think I've ever seen them look as hot and bothered as they did out there. They were perspiring facially. You know, there was just this perpetual glow of, I'm so hot and it's so humid and I'm so tired. And I really, I thought it was one of the great physical achievements to get through that match.
I'd say glow is a very flattering way of describing what their faces were emitting during that match. I mean, humidity like tonight, it's not about heat or how you feel. It's it produces a kind of claustrophobia, a claustrophobic feeling of, and everything, the intensity of everything you're experiencing is amplified, you know, and I say that from my very modest experiences, all of those are amplified. So the amplification of already highly emotive and testing emotions and physical feelings is, I mean, it's, I can barely contemplate it. That point, that shot from Wozniacki to set up Match Point, will, I'm not sure I'll ever forget that point. It took my breath away. I could pick out plenty, but that was the second to last point of the match. So obviously it's really, really sticking in my mind.
And that's the other thing, is that that's where it brings into focus the ability of these two players to move, because shots that are winners against other people, it was reminiscent in feel to the Djokovic-Nadal final here. You know, the one that was over 5 hours long. It had that feeling of, well, I said it midway through the third set, oh no, you know, my mum always says this, somebody's got to lose this, and that doesn't feel fair. And actually, I mean, the one thing is, Halep was a break-up, 4-3 in that decider, and Wozniacki immediately took a medical timeout. Any issues with that?
She's walking towards us right now, so if I do have issues, I'm going to wait just a couple of moments. She's disappeared into the Channel 7 studio. So, yes, I can now be frank. Look, she asked for the trainer at 3-all. There is sort of an unwritten rule of sportsmanship that you shouldn't take a medical timeout before your opponent is due to serve, which is what happened in this case. But she did ask for the trainer at 3-all, and then it came after that game. I potentially have an issue with it. I'm not sure we're ever going to know how
that's it. Simona Halep had one as well, didn't she? Midway through the second set, I think.
She did, yeah, and we'll never know how technical that one may or may not.
Roger Federer had one a couple of times last year. Yeah. We have to accept that this happens and it is allowed.
The most interesting thing about that one is, I think it was the one before the fifth set against Wawrinka, where he actually confessed to it being 90% tactical. He said that he wanted to just...
Everybody does it, and I thought I would.
Yeah, wanted to sort of look himself in the mirror and do what Andy Murray did. Not a medical timeout, he had a bathroom break, didn't he, before his fifth set in the US Open 2012 final. And he said he gave himself a talking to in the mirror, didn't he? So, look, we know it happens. It's an uncomfortable, sort of unsatisfactory situation. I don't think it's what we should be focusing on as the main thing, but it is definitely worth mentioning, because Halep was sitting there 4-3 up, two games away, with everything to think about, thinking about the French Open final, you know, thinking about being in winning positions and losing everything that she's dreamed of. And all I can hope is that this is less painful than Paris, because she left absolutely everything out there. Okay, she was a breakup, but it's not the same as being a set and three love up and completely in control and surrendering that control.
I don't think she did that much wrong tonight.
She didn't.
She played brilliantly.
She found something physically that not many human beings could find. She didn't. She left everything out there, and I hope that that is a comfort rather than a painful thought.
I know, because the heart was breaking for her at the end there, wasn't it? That having been said,
her mum was there, David. I hate it when they lose. I know Wozniacki's dad was there. I know the parents are usually there, but I can't bear it.
Yeah, I know. That all said, to me, the reaction that she had was one of, I've just got to keep doing the right things here. And again, the tangents are there with Andy Murray. He went through all this. Let's not forget the 2010 final here, when he said, you know, was it that one where he said, I can cry like Roger, I just can't play like him? And he was devastated. And then he had the one in 2012 when he lost the Wimbledon final. That was his fourth. Simona Halep's had three. But he did it on his fifth one. He did it. And if there's any justice in this world, Simona Halep will have her moment.
Absolutely. Hands down, the best player, best WTA player never to have won a Grand Slam. That's probably an awful title to hold. But she's so far and away better than any other non-Grand Slam winning female player that it just can't not happen. They'll have to give her an honorary Grand Slam title if she doesn't win one. You know, you get like honorary university doctorates, which seem to be utterly meaningless. Never quite understood them. But yeah, something will have to be done. The tennis gods will have to intervene. So yeah, I hope these things are comforting to her. It sounds pitiful, doesn't it? Because she's probably, I don't know, in the depths of despair right now. But yeah, I hope there's some comfort there eventually.
But congratulations, Caroline Wozniacki, because, you know, it's a great story in its own.
It's a wonderful story, and it's wonderful to see that much joy in a human being. And as I say, for it to be just completely untempered joy, I think that's a pretty rare thing. You know, we didn't quite see that when Andy Murray won his first Grand Slam title in the US Open in 2012. There were other things going on. There was disbelief. There was sort of stress at how to manage the
whole
situation.
Shock.
He was in shock. He was in disbelief. He couldn't find the watch in his bag, had forgotten to put the watch on. You know, I remember speaking to some photographers after that, and how crushingly disappointed they were in his reaction, because the photos were rubbish. You know, you want the Caroline Wozniacki flat on her back on the floor with the racket tossed to one side. That's a photo.
That's an awesome photo.
So yeah, I think there's something pretty special and rare, even among Grand Slam champions, to see that kind of pure joy.
We'll get on to the men's final and preview that very shortly. Just a couple of other words here. The doubles title was won yesterday by Tamer Babos and Kristina Mladenovic, who has had a miserable time on the singles court. So, you know, they beat Alina Vesnina and Ekaterina Makarova. That is a heck of an achievement. That is a good doubles team they beat. And, you know, it's nice to see Mladenovic get some happiness on a tennis court.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Usually, you know, we it's a talking point, you know, how much success and commitment to doubles can improve your singles game. And she's been a very good doubles player for a long time. This isn't her first Grand Slam title. But it is rare to be experiencing two such extremes in the two different forms of the sport. And it makes you think that it surely has to turn around. Now, on the one hand, she's got her favourite surface of clay coming up relatively soon. On the other hand, that's where she has all the points to defend. Her ranking could drop off a cliff if she doesn't start getting some results. So, she needs to channel that doubles success big time.
She does. But well done to that pair for their doubles triumph. Also, junior boys champion today. Always a great story when you see a junior win a title, but this one's particularly poignant because 20 years after Petr Korda won the singles title here, his son has won the junior title. Sebastian Korda, who celebrated with the same scissor kick that Petr Korda used to do exactly when he beat Marcelo Rios to win this title in 1998. And they've also, I mean, what a sporting family they are, because he has a sister who's won the Australian Open golf. His other sister is a very talented golfer as well. I mean, that is some story.
Yeah, what does their mum do? I mean, it can't all be Peter Korda's genes, can it? I mean, I'm sure they're good sporting genes.
I'm fairly sure she is a sports person as well.
Right, well, that would make total sense.
I seem to remember it back in the day when he was winning Grand Slam titles. She was in the support team box, and I can't remember 100%. But, you know, there are some serious genes there that have been at play. And plus, I mean, I know Petr Korda a little bit, and he. I remember when they were very young, and he was 100% invested in their own sporting careers, and you know, but not. I mean, my sense was not in an aggressive, overbearing way, just a supportive way, laying the foundations. And that's pretty exciting to be able to chart his success.
And how old is he?
I think he's 19.
Something like that. So an old for a junior.
Maybe not that. Maybe that it's his sister that's 19. Maybe he's younger than that. But anyway, great story, and congratulations to Sebastian Korda. A word as well about Dylan Alcott, who won today. His stats are extraordinary. And I noticed last night when Federer had the early win against Hyun Sung, Dylan Alcott came out to play in in front of the full crowd, and everybody stayed. And I mean, this guy is such a star here.
He is. He's all over the adverts, isn't he? He does a banking advert here. I think he does another advert as well. He's got a Nike deal. And that's blooming great. He's leading the way, isn't he, for wheelchair, for disability athletes. And I remember him meeting Andy Murray here last year. He was doing some work for Channel 7, the host broadcaster here, alongside his playing. And we just had this lovely meeting with Andy Murray. They had to film this little skit thing. Of course, this time last year, it was the first tournament Andy Murray had played since being knighted, and they had to film what was a fairly cringy knighthood-based skit involving, as I recall, a plastic sword. But it was all done in such great humour, and the respect and admiration from Andy Murray was very evident, and rightly so. And we've said this a couple of times on the podcast, but if you ever get the opportunity to watch wheelchairs, I don't know anybody that hasn't been exposed to it, and often it'll sort of be accidentally exposed, you know, maybe like a lot of the crowd in here were last night. I don't think anyone ever goes, oh, that's not as good as I thought it was going to be. I'm not sure anyone's ever had that reaction, so if you ever get the chance, then check it out.
Yeah, that was Dylan Alcott in the quad wheelchair singles. I also had an opportunity before the singles final took place to watch most of the men's wheelchair singles final between Kaneda and Hude. I mean, it was an amazing match. Hude was winning 5-1 in the third set, and Kaneda came back to win it on a tiebreak. It was incredible, the rallies they were having, the atmosphere, the drive of the two players. I mean, it looked like They would have just done anything to win.
They are both extraordinary stories. Shingo Kaneda, I think, I don't think he's world number one at the moment, but has been in the. He was world number one for many, many years. He kept winning the ITF World Champion award. And Stefan Hude, what do he and Roger Federer have in common, David?
I don't know.
They both have two sets of twins.
Really?
And they have a real bond over it. They always stop and chat and compare notes. They're the only people each of them know.
That's a better fact than your crocodile one.
They have two sets of twins. It's not better than the
crocodile
one.
It's way better. Actually, somebody shedding some doubt on whether that's accurate or whether you might have been given a line by that crocodile handler.
Take it up with the crocodile handler.
Yeah, well, I believe you, is all I can say. Especially the way you're looking at me. Sebastian Korda, just very quickly, let's just check his age. He's 17, incidentally. Oh. So now we know.
A wee baby.
So the men's singles final is tomorrow. It is Roger Federer against Marin Cilic. And I, earlier on today, had chance to go to the Legends lunch, which was a fantastic occasion. You know, they were honouring one of the players.
He's coming out again, David. Just, I feel like, you know, if the trophy's going to be paraded past us by Caroline Wozniacki one more time. There she goes. Sorry,
yeah,
David.
So there is Caroline.
She's a Grand Slam champion before our eyes.
That's right. Caroline Wozniacki is a Grand Slam champion, just to remind you. Not that you did need much reminding. But yes, we will have another Grand Slam champion tomorrow. It will either be one bloke who's won 20 of the things if he manages to win it, or it'll be the other fella who's trying to win only his second, but that's not bad either, is it? Anyway, this Legends lunch that I was at, it was honouring the Australian great Mal Anderson, who in 1957 was the first unseeded player to win the US National Singles Championship. He played on the Davis Cup team, and he helped the Australians claim the 1957 and 1973 championships, both in the United States. In that wonderful occasion, that wonderful lunch, Marin Cilic's former coach, Goran Ivanišević, was there. I had a chance to speak to him. And he told me about what he thought Cilic needed to do and what he said to him when he sent Cilic out to beat Federer in that US Open. And he said, you know, he's playing that sort of level of tennis. He said, when I sent him out there, I just said, relax. You just need to relax and play your normal game. And as Alex Kuretsia just pops up for a quick chat,
he casually loitered past.
Let's find out what he thinks is going to happen.
As if he didn't mind whether he was invited on, but we know.
In the men's singles final, what do you think, Alex?
Hello, everyone, first of all. Men's finals, final. I believe everybody feels like Federer is the big favorite. I do think so, too. Of course, we know that Marin's been playing an unbelievable tournament, very aggressive, moving so well, you know. And
oh, it's Mats Wilander.
Yeah,
he's here as well. Hello, Mats.
Matthias. Hey.
He's living. He's tired. He's been working so hard the whole 15 days. No, so I was saying that even if Cilic is moving much better, which I think is one of his improvements, you know, his forehand is way more aggressive, more solid than before. He used to make some more mistakes. His backhand cross court is impressive me so much because he plays so deep and so much to the sides, to the tram lines. And I think it's difficult for the opponents to get his backhand like it happened to Kyle Edmund the other night. I'm not so sure about his second serve. Sometimes I feel like he doesn't go that much for it while Federer does it. So I think Federer is moving faster than him. So I really see it very difficult for Marin.
Very difficult for Marin. Just quickly, one of the people I spoke to earlier today was Wayne Ferreira, who was one of the few players who had a winning record against Roger Federer. Two wins, one defeat. Long time ago, but still, two wins. And we were talking last week about how you had beaten Roger Federer more than once. How did you do it?
Playing so high to his backhand, especially on clay.
Bit like Rafa, but with the backhand and your case.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was younger. He was making a little bit of mistakes with his backhand up high into his shoulder. And you know what happened? I beat him like fourth round of the French, year 2000, and then quarters in 2001. And when I went off the court, I was like in the players' lounge, and my dad came to me, and he said, "Well, this kid, he plays okay, no?" And I'm like, "What you playing? What do you mean he plays okay?" I said, "He plays unbelievable." He said, "Yeah, but so many shanks with the backhand side." And I'm like, "Yeah, because I was playing so high to his backhand, that was the only chance I have to beat him, you know." And he said, "No, his forehand and serve were good, but not too solid from the backhand side." So I think Roger improved that. And I said to him, "Listen, this kid, he's going to be amazing." And after, actually, 3 weeks after, he beat Sampras on grass at Wimbledon.
Yeah, he did beat Sampras on grass at Wimbledon. But Alex Krejcik will forever remember beating Roger Federer many times.
I'm not for a moment suggesting that Goran wasn't giving you the whole truth earlier, David, but he must have said more to Marin Cilic than just relax. I don't know about you, but when someone tells me to relax, it is the most unrelaxing thing that anyone can possibly... It's not like someone tells you to relax and you go, "Oh, right then."
I can vouch for that. I tell you all the time.
I suddenly feel relaxed. Thank you very much. He must have said more than that. He must have.
Of course.
What did he say?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when they say relax or enjoy. They say, "Go out there, enjoy." Yeah, enjoy. You think of Caroline or Halep, did they enjoy it tonight? Tough. It is, potentially, it's nice to feel like, okay, just go there and try to play your game. But you don't know how you're going to feel. You don't know how the speed of the opponent is going to be, you know. So you always have some nerves. And it is nice to feel, okay, it's okay. Just relax, go out there and try to play your game. But, of course, then you need to know how to play. Because if you don't know, even if you're very relaxed, you see that your opponent is playing better than you and you have no tactics. So I think for sure they talk about tactics. But mainly said, okay, then forget about it and just play your game and relax in a way.
Well, when I spoke to Goran, he said, "I think Marin will go out there and play properly, play the sort of tennis he should play, big man's tennis." He says, "I think his game can hurt Federer." But he said, "I still think Federer in five."
I usually don't do predictions as you like, as you love.
That's what we're all about, Alex.
Yeah, but you know, I said before, I think Roger, he has the remote control from the TV. You know what I mean with that? You know, when you're watching TV and you have the remote control, that means that you change whenever you want. So I feel like Marin, of course, he has a chance to win. Of course. I mean, definitely he does. But I still feel that Roger, he's got a lot of variation, you know. He improved a lot his backhand on the line, which it helps a lot his game. He's using his slice to go low to Marin's backhands, and then he will turn around with the forehand, you know. From forehand to forehand, I think Roger, he will hurt a little bit more Marin because he moves a little bit faster, so he will open up a little bit more the core. And then Roger's forehand down the line, it's also very dangerous, you know. So, and also, like, second serve from Roger, I think he goes for it much more than he used to do. Like, a little bit like Sampras, you know, when he went for it a lot.
Trusts it.
Yeah, it's something that they feel like, okay, now I can go for it, you know, so.
Nick Kyrgios has brought that back into fashion, hasn't he? Going for the second serve, going for broke on the second serve.
Yeah, but that's not going for the second serve. That's hitting another first serve.
Yes, That's hitting probably one of my best serves ever, yes.
Well, I'm going to go for Roger Federer in five. But do you know what? I think it's going to go five, and it really could go... I don't feel that confident about either way, because I think Cilic might be able to find a way. We've got another broadcast going on here, so we'll keep our voices down. What do you think, Catherine?
I think that Caroline Wozniacki is about to walk right past us. I think that's what this man wearing the gloves is informing these broadcasters.
I see.
And I think he's wearing the gloves because he is doing some trophy holding.
Oh, yeah, he
and
is.
You're not allowed to hold. Only champions can hold the trophy gloveless. Fun fact.
Really? I mean, we don't have gloves and we're not a champions, so we better stick with the microphone.
I don't think we're going to be offered the chance to hold. What do I think? I think it's not going to be a Wimbledon final all over again. I think it's going to be a match.
Wozniacki-Halep-esque.
Yeah, but sorry, Maren. I do think it's going to be Federer. Probably in five, yeah. I think Federer in five is probably... I mean, they've both got plenty in the tank still, haven't they? They can afford a five-setter. She's about to walk past us, David.
Yeah, the first... glimpse of Caroline Wozniacki as Grand Slam champion as she walks towards us holding, and we say goodbye to Alex Kuretcher, who's been a wonderful sport yet again. We love the guy. And here comes Caroline Wozniacki with her big shiny silver trophy, and she's just having a little chat there with Nick McCarville, who is part of the Tennis Australia broadcast team here, and Catherine and I are just, you know, we're just quietly waiting in the background because, you know, we don't want to get in the way, but we're looking at a new Grand Slam champion here, and it is richly deserved. We're very pleased for her. And on that note, Catherine, I think we should say goodbye to our listeners as Caroline just leans against the railing with the Rod Laver Arena in the background and just reflects on the best day of her life, I would imagine, career-wise.
I'd certainly hoped the wedding's going to have a lot to live up to, isn't it?
It sure is. We have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We are sponsored by La Manga Club, the fantastic holiday destination that does great tennis holidays and golf holidays in Spain. We have executive producers of Melanie Bowes and Triple S and tennisballs.com. Plus, we have our little ferret, Charlie the Ferret, as our mascot. We're going to be back after the men's singles final tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.